Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today I have a guest with quite a story of hope and faith and purpose. He is pastor and author Rick Blaisdell. Rick lives in Vermont, and he was honorably discharged from the U.S. Air Force in 1968 and served two more years in the Air Force Reserves. His life after the military took a turn toward playing in several rock bands. He was a drummer. Drugs and alcohol. This lifestyle continued for another 13 years until God supernaturally intervened in Rick's life. Rick and his wife, Faith, are the co-founders of Renewed Life in Jesus Church, established in 1986 in Rockingham, Vermont. He was ordained into the ministry on November 18, 1990, and served as the co-pastor until April 1999. And later in the same month, he was officially designated by the Board of Ministry to serve as the new senior pastor. Rick still serves the church in that capacity. His heart's desire is to see people from all lifestyles with all kinds of problems and issues, sicknesses and disease, brought willingly to the cross of Christ for healing, deliverance, and restoration. And through the Renewed Life in Jesus Church, Rick is and has been very much involved with supporting missionaries and sending short-term mission workers nearly every year since 1991, including himself, into the foreign countries of Germany, Austria, the Czech Republic, the Republic of Slovakia, Kenya, Africa, the Philippines, and South India. And he is the author of two published books, One Life to Give, the daily journals of his short-term mission trips, and in the preface of his recently published book, One Life to Give, Living Water for Thirsty Souls, Rick shares in more depth of his life with the intent of showing the reader how powerfully God can and will change a person's life if he or she is willing. And I am so looking forward to this conversation. So welcome to the show, Rick.
Oh, thank you, and good morning.
Oh, hello. I'm so glad that we had this opportunity. I have so much to ask you today. I want to start with this, though. You went from rock and roll and drugs to founding a church. And I know there's been a lot in between, an abusive father, foster homes, living in your car, not eating for a week, being held at gunpoint. I mean, you really have a most incredible story to share. If you wouldn't mind, give us a glimpse into that journey.
My journey, actually, for me personally, as a child growing up, it seemed very normal in Vermont. I mean, we lived in a rural community, having at that time very little contact with the outside world except for school. It just seemed normal to us as kids, but as I look back on it, in retrospect, I found that it probably was normal, but it was just issues that most people would never talk about. But it formed the path for my life as it went forward, and becoming very self-independent. That feeling that I didn't need anybody, I survived all of that, and I sort of grew up as with a survival mentality, I guess, that ended up getting me into a lot of really bad decisions in my life that finally got a hold of me and wrecked probably close to 13 years of my life through drugs and alcohol.
You give us that catalyst. What was the moment that was like the aha moment where you said, oh my, I can do this, or what happened to help you change your life and get it going in the right direction?
Mostly through my brother-in-law, my wife's brother. He was one of the guitarists in a band, and he, like us, had gotten into the rock and roll, drugs, alcohol, party lifestyle. But it seemed, after a while, it seemed like a bottomless pit that we couldn't get out of. And he became a born-again Christian, and right before our very eyes, we saw an instantaneous life change of no more drugs, no more alcohol. He had Christian literature all over his house, which drove us up the wall because we didn't understand anything like that. But we saw a changed life and a changed heart by one that was the closest to us in our family. And we both desired, after 6 years of our marriage, that we really wanted that change in our lives too. But he didn't know how to tell us exactly in certain words, so he took my wife to his pastor, and she became a believer, and a couple days later, he and his wife came to our mobile home in Florida, and that's when I gave my life to Christ as well. And all the drugs, all the alcohol, even the desire for those things, and that old lifestyle was totally removed out of my life. It was an instantaneous transformation that began a whole new life, and I was finally free from the bitterness, unforgiveness, people that had wronged us or taken advantage all through my life. It was all gone. I just let it all go, and God gave me a brand new life on March 1983, and I've never looked back on that time. It's been a wonderful journey since, and a whole new way of life.
My, it's nothing short of a miracle.
No, that's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so many people are involved in this kind of thing these days, and I guess I was so interested to talk with you is to help understand, you know, how you can turn that around. People aren't doomed to live that type of a lifestyle. And I think during all of this, you were writing some of this down, like in a journal?
Yes, the journaling actually started when I took my first mission trip in 1991 into the Czech Republic and Slovakia. And I wanted a legacy or something to leave for our two children, whom were very, very young at that time. My wife would just tell them that Dad's gone for 2 or 3 weeks. He's overseas on a mission trip. But to little kids, that doesn't mean much. I'd already come to Christ back in 1983, and I know you've read the preface in more detail, but the journaling actually started in 1991, but I felt that it was really important to establish credibility and continuity to share that very important part of my life up to that point. And so it's a family story, actually, that no one ever talked about. It was kind of just kept quietly locked away. And it's time to take the wraps off and show people that no matter how your life begins, and it's like a race, it doesn't matter how you start, it's how you finish that counts.
Mm-hmm. So the journaling came after you were clean from drugs and you were living a better life.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, when did you realize then that you wanted to share your journal and your thoughts as a book?
I think probably right at the time I had been offered the opportunity to go, invited to go, I brought up a blank notebook, and I just wanted to journal all that I experienced, all that I saw, and well, I was really surprised. And because I wanted it to eventually go to our kids when they were older and might have a better understanding of where I went and what I had been doing. And plus, you're too far away to make phone calls to let people know what you're doing, really. I didn't have that kind of contact from overseas. I stayed with families. So the journal ended up being a continuation, because each year I kept getting invited to go back into some of the same areas or new areas, and the first journal ended up going all the way through 2011. So each year was a trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept journaling, and people kept thinking that I should write a book. So there was some peer pressure there about, there was a story to be told of how believers lived in other countries. It's very contrary to the comfort zone that we live in here in the States. So a lot of it is their story as well. What was it really like? You get into India and some of the really rural areas of third world countries, there's no doctors, there's no clinics, there's no medicine. You're miles and miles from the nearest hospital. Most people don't have cars. Very few had electricity or running water. So there was a lot to be told, mm-hmm, about what it's like to live in those countries, because many people over here may never get that opportunity. So I published the book. The first one was just the journals. The second one was an expanded text edition where there was a lot more to be told, that I had many resources still available to me, photographs, travel notes, ministry plans. plans that were written in great detail that I could glean more from, because people who read the first book, the journal, said, you wrote a good story, but you didn't go into any detail. We want to hear details. And so that was the reason for the second one. It came from readers' reviews and personal comments that would add a lot more to the realism of the journeys, because I know personally that many people will never have that opportunity to go where I went, and I just, whether the book is a major seller or not, there was a story to be told, and I feel good about finally telling it.
Wow. As you were saying that, whether it's a bestseller or not, most often that really doesn't matter. If the right people read that book and take something from it, even if it's one person, you've done your job.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And one person personally said that it, you know, she had backslidden from her faith, and she said reading that book, because she was a person that my wife and I knew for 40 years, and she said after reading it, this book, it made her want to be a better Christian, and she turned her life around mm-hmm. and recommitted it to the Lord. And even for that one person, it was all worth it.
I agree. I absolutely agree with that. So obviously your mission trips had a huge impact on the writing of the book.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm going again this September on the 12th. I'm going into a new area in India. I was invited by an Indian pastor and his wife to hook up with them for a week and then eventually journey to the city that I usually go with the ministry that I've been going into India for 12 years. So mm-hmm. I'm going to have both places on the same trip this year coming.
Wow, that's exciting. Good for you. Well, now I know in addition to the detailed journal entries, the book is comprised of original color photos, maps, testimonies of salvation, transformation, miracles, and signs, and more. So you're going to probably continue with that on this trip as well, and maybe for your next book, yeah?
I probably will journal this one because it's going into a new area, and I may or may not have an opportunity to go again. And that was another reason for the journals, because you know that if you've traveled anywhere, or even on holiday or vacation, there are so many things that happen in a week or 2 weeks that if you don't write them down, you won't remember them all. Mm-hmm. Certain things we always would remember, but I'm a stickler for details. I guess that was part of my military training. I pay attention to details, and so I probably will journal it.
Well, I hope so, for our readers' sake, right? Let's talk about your writing method then in your process. Going forward, would you continue to write journal style?
excuse me. I probably would if it concerns a trip like this, because I feel it's the best way to capture what it's like. If I wanted to write it in a way that the reader would feel like they went with me, even to sitting on an airplane and what it's like here in Vermont,
mm-hmm.
Many of my friends say they would never ride in anything higher than their ankle bones. So even to the description of what it's like, that experience is like, and over, that's how I traveled. I'm an airport, airplane, food junkie. I love to fly. Never had a bad flight. I just love it. I think my bucket list would be to fly on the space shuttle sometime, but there'd really have to be some high strings pulled for that to happen.
You're funny. Oh, my. Well, now, if you had to write this all over again, would you change anything in your book?
I thought a lot about that, and if I did, I wouldn't know where to start. I still feel it's important to get readers' feedback. I guess because for the story of my life and the things that have happened in it, I think because of the trips, and they were daily, there were meetings every day, the journaling seemed to be very appropriate for keeping track of all of those things. So I don't know at this point how I would or could rewrite that without the journals, because a lot of people like the journals. Mm-hmm. It's like getting up in the morning and having a devotion in the morning.
Right.
It's always something happening that day. So I don't know. That was the only way I knew to do it and be accurate and keep track of details. So I don't know on the horizon if there would be something else coming. I did write a short story on So You Want to Go on a Short-Term Missions Trip, and I wrote things in that that are very helpful to people who have not traveled about passports, visas, possibly staying in people's homes, what to bring, what not to bring, what to do, what not to do, being very thankful if you're a guest in someone's house, you don't sit there barefoot on the floor with your feet sticking in their face towards them, and little customs things that I've learned over the years, but it was geared specifically from my personal experiences and where I went. Someone else, there's a lot of different kind of mission trips. People go on medical trips. They go on building projects to build schools and churches and things like that to help in the community. So, but there are some common threads throughout all of that. Number one, if you're a Christian, you represent the Lord. Number two, you represent our nation. And number three, we all leave footprints, and people will judge us by the walk that we live before them. So I bring that out, and it's a short story, but that's my latest one. I don't have it published anywhere. I've kind of got it stashed here on my computer. And I also talked about the importance of following, along those lines, following things that people need to be aware of when you're traveling. Particularly, I go alone a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's been several times I had someone go with me, but for the most part, there's a difference between having a desire to go someplace and a call to go someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Many people have a desire, but it never goes anywhere. But if you're called to it, there's a compelling, there's a wooing, there's a drawing, a prompting, an urging in your heart to do everything that you can possibly do, and also... from the Christian perspective, we believe that if we're called, then God's going to open the doors, so it takes all the worry out of it for me. I don't have to pull what hair I have left out and get into a frenzy over how's all this going to work.
Right.
I just step out, and the doors open before me already. It's only been 4 days since I purchased my plane tickets, and already people seem to be coming out of the woodwork to help me go. That's a wonderful thing. See, I can't make those things happen.
Right, right. You just let it happen, right?
Yep. Once you take that step of faith, then all the other pieces come into play, and they just all fall right into place.
Well, you are truly a testament to this, given your background and where you are today. It's an astounding story for me, and I know for our listeners as well. Now, the title of the book, how did you decide on the title, One Life to Give, Living Water for Thirsty Souls?
Okay, One Life to Give, that was the same title of the original one, was a journal. But when I came to Christ, I was in my mid-30s, and all of a sudden I had this, I don't know, some people might call it a revelation or an understanding or an awareness of something, but I had a sudden realization that I had allowed a lifestyle to really wreck a lot of the first half of my life. And in the natural, doing drugs and alcohol, I sensed that if I had continued that path, it would have shortened the life that I still had after a suicide attempt and a drug overdose.
Oh,
previous to that, I said, well, now my life is in God's hands, and whatever I have left of it, I want to give it to Him. And I became a very selfless person and began to realize that life is more important than selfies, and that it's about giving your life, sharing your life, sowing your life into the lives of others to make a difference in their lives. And so, being this was a book, it's almost like an autobiography also.
Yeah.
It's a story of my life and the things that have happened. One Life to Give was the words that came to me. That's what I have left. I have very little to leave anyone else, but I still have my life, whatever's left of it, so I want to give that. Mm-hmm. I would give that as a testimony and a witness to what God can do with a life if you're willing to trust
Him. Mm-hmm. Wow, this is beautiful. And what does your family think of your writing?
Well, at first, they were rather taken aback that I had talked about some things that had been buried for a lot of years, but once it was out there, they seemed to get beyond that and found that the book, they didn't look at it from a spiritual perspective in that sense, but they thought, boy, Rick has either fell off a cliff or got a very adventuresome kind of life, but I've always been adventuresome. I'm so excited about all the new places I may still have to go, but they really liked it. They thought it was a very interesting book because I brought back eyewitness details of what things look like, what people ate, where they slept, their living conditions. So it opened up a door into what it's like to live in a third world country, what it was like to live under communism in Eastern Europe. That flavor that even my family would have never had any exposure to, probably. And so they all, of course, have embraced it and have found it a very interesting book. Because they look at it from that perspective as it's a very interesting book and very compelling.
So obviously there's a lot of surprising things in the book for your family to read. Was there any surprising things that you learned in creating your book?
I think I learned how shallow my faith was in the beginning. I had faith God to change my life and deliver me from the lifestyle that we had been participating in. But I think the surprise was the doors that opened to me that I never, even in a dream or a vision, could have imagined happening. I mean, I live in Vermont. I still live in Vermont, a small town of Chester, 3,500 people. And I still marvel to this day of all of these open doors that have happened. My book is now being translated into Spanish. All the costs for publishing and translating have all been covered.
Oh.
The translator works the U.S. Embassy in Paris, and that's through a connection that happened on an airplane. Amazing things.
Yeah.
Those things, to me, are surprising because I had no idea that anything like this would ever happen. Just my life now is every day I get up and I say, wow, I wonder what good things are going to happen today. And I wake up with an expectancy of good things. I mean, we hear a lot of bad news, but there's a lot of good things happening too.
Oh, I love that. A good thing happened to me today. I met you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So tell us, what is next for you? What's coming up next? I know you're traveling to India. Any new book, do you think, or what's on the agenda for you?
I'm doing another writer seminar. That's another door of opportunity. The man who interviewed me first for the new book, Vermont has a network of Christian stations called the Light Radio Network, a plug there for them. But that opened up the door. The program director interviewed me, and immediately, I don't know, we just seemed to connect. He's a writer of fiction, and mine was nonfiction, and the contrast, and somehow he had this idea of doing writer seminars. We've done two last year, and people from those seminars have learned enough to get their works published, and it's exciting to see that, and we're doing another one on June 11th. And we're running 35 to 36 people who were willing to come on a Saturday and spend all day with us to teach them about getting their papers together, a manuscript, editing, and all the publishing process, and actually to the marketing and sales promotion of their own book eventually. And that's where both of us have acquired a lot of knowledge that I never thought I'd need to know any of those things, but I was sure mistaken about that.
Oh, sure. The whole publishing process is changed a lot, too, also with self-publishing. And so that's exciting that you've got that many people that'll dedicate a whole day to come together to perfect their craft.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that were like me that they wanted to write something but didn't know what to do with it. And I, you know, when my first book came out, oh, wow, I was so excited. I gave away a lot of copies. A lot of copies were sold. And then that was the end of it. I didn't know what to do with it.
Right.
And I spent the next 3 years in anticipation of the new one while I was writing it, and did three 3 years of intensive and extensive screening out the stuff that didn't pertain to me, but plotting a course through all of it to come to sales, marketing, and promotion, because I needed to know those things while the book was at the publisher, because you still have usually a three-month window of opportunity.
Right.
You have to start making your plan before the book comes out. Otherwise, it sits and you don't know what to do with it, where to go with it.
That's very true. And so many people that write are not necessarily sales and marketing people. And so then it's easy just to do exactly what you say. You could get those creative thoughts out, finally get it published. But then if no one reads it, it's not doing anybody any good. Did you self-publish these?
Yes, I did. Well, actually, the second one, I went through a Christian publishing company to get it into the Christian book market, because I didn't know how to do that in the first one. I weren't aware of contacts and being able to do that. So I did actually have Zulon Press. They were extremely helpful, and they had a lot of promotional things available through a publishing package in the Christian community. October is Pastors Appreciation Month, and I was contacted by them to get a good publishing contract for half price of the pastor. So that was another door. I never anticipated that opening. But I learned a lot through that process, but still, no matter how much a publisher can do, the author is going to find himself or herself doing things that will draw people's attention to your book. You could have the greatest book in the world, but if nobody knows where it is, that's why I was excited when I got your email. You even had my book title there. Mm-hmm. Oh, somebody came across it somewhere. I don't even know how that happened.
You don't need to know. The door opened, right?
Yeah, so I'm very thankful for that. And that's another thing that I've learned to be so thankful for. Everything that happened in the past, it's gone, you know, it's under my feet, if you will. But every day, I'm just thankful for all of the good that I see, the goodness that I experience, the people that I encounter. I'm a very incredibly optimistic. My glass isn't half full. That sucker's running over.
Oh, we need more people like you. What a pleasure to meet you here. Where can we go to learn more about you, your work, and where, most importantly, can we get a copy of your book? Where can we purchase your books?
Okay. As many authors do, my son and I designed a book author webpage. That's onelifetogivebook.com. And there are links to purchasing places, but Amazon has it. Barnes & Noble has it. The e-book is in the Apple iStore. Most online bookstores have them. A lot of books now are published on demand or print on demand, so a lot of them don't have a lot of copies on hand, but can be ordered and printed immediately. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and the iStore, Apple iStore, are the three that come to mind. But the website has reviews, all the activities, the things that have happened with the book, a lot more details about the book, the story behind it, reviews, all those things that most people would perhaps want to read. I believe it's very easy to navigate. I told my son I wanted it to be daddy-friendly for other computer people like myself. That's very easy to navigate through it and find anything and everything that a person would want to know.
Excellent. And that is at onelifetogivebook.com.
To put the word book in there. That was part of it. So that...
Yeah, onelifetogivebook.com. Okay. Well, now, is there anything we missed today that you'd like to talk about, or any final words of advice?
Well, there always is, because there's always stories from the book, but I think for what we were looking to accomplish was an awareness that people's lives don't have to stay the way they are. Things that have happened in people's lives can be overcome, and life goes on, and a person's attitude has everything to do with it, and what you're seeking, what you want in your life, and dare to dream big dreams. I guess that's, other than the various stories and accounts in the book, I think the book clearly points in that direction. It offers hope to the hopeless. That's not just a catchy phrase. I really mean that with all my heart, because my life was an example headed for tragedy, and the Lord turned it all around, and I was just willing to let Him. I think a willingness to change goes a long ways, because people can have a good influence in your life, but they cannot forcefully change a person, and why would they? We all have, I think, a desire to see our children live a better quality of life than we did. I think that's in the heart of moms and dads. But my story was, I'm sure, unusual in the sense of I was able to talk about it many years later, and how I wasn't going to settle for a life that was headed for destruction. I was in my middle 30s, and I said, this has to change. I'm not going to pursue this any further. I'll tell you, the last 35 years have been far greater than the first 35 were.
Well, I'm so glad you had that opportunity to turn it around, and so does everyone else that's listening. And that's why I was excited to talk with you today, to share that message of hope, and to share the book that you wrote. And I really encourage everyone to head over to your website, onelifetogivebook.com. Rick, you're beautiful. Thank you so much for taking the time to share you with us today.
Thank you so much. And just to go down as a seed planted, and it will grow where it's planted. And the heart is the soil. Our interview is like the seed that's been sown, and I know that there are people who will find this interview, and their life will change as a result of it for the better.
Oh, you make me smile. Thank you.
Thank you, too.